Hi everyone, I'm Liam and welcome to another episode of Exploring the NQS, a bonus series from The Early Education Show, exclusively for our Patreon supporters. So if you're listening to this, that means you're supporting the main show, which means I want to start with a big thank you. The main show will always be free, but those of you who choose to actually support us financially really, really help us and the show out. In Exploring the NQS, I take a look at one element of the National Quality Standard one at a time until I've covered all 40, and we're rapidly bearing down on all 40. My background is as an early childhood educator and teacher, centre director, and I currently oversee professional learning and development for Northside Community Service, a not-for-profit early education provider based in Canberra. All right, let's get started. This week, we're looking at element 6.2.2, Access and Participation. It's part of Quality Area 6, Collaborative Partnerships with Families and Communities, and it's the second element of Standard 6.2, Collaborative Partnerships. The description for this element is, effective partnerships support children's access, inclusion, and participation in the program. All right, so what's this one all about? This is kind of the big one for Quality Area 6, I think. When we think about Quality Area 6 and engagement in that sort of community space, what we're really talking about is that idea of access and participation. So the kind of big idea here is that lots of people and groups, so educators, families, individual community members, and then groups, so medical services, other community services, kind of work together to make sure that children can benefit from early education. So this is about making sure that what we know in Australia can be a tricky sector in terms of subsidies, in terms of access, that children can actually just benefit from early education full stop by attending. So this is really about how services reach out and bring in members of the community to make sure children can be included and can have access to early education. All right, so let's have a think about this one in practice. One of the things I want to start with here is I think sometimes this element can be reduced down to the inclusion element, and what that can sometimes also then be reduced down to is this is about sort of inclusion support. This is about children with disabilities. That's definitely a part of it, and we shouldn't, we shouldn't minimise the need to have a really strong approach to that. But it's not just about that. And it's important to remember that if we're really thinking deeply about inclusion, particularly from a social justice perspective, which I'll talk about a bit, but really, you know, needs far more than 15 minutes to think about. The way we want to think about this is that all children have specific inclusion requirements for whatever they for particular things. Every child is unique. Every child has, you know, particular needs and requirements as they come into a group setting with lots of children and educators potentially. For the first time outside their immediate circle of family. So inclusion isn't about identifying particular children. Inclusion about saying that everyone needs support and everyone needs different things. Some children need less, some children need more, some children need more complex needs, some inclusion needs are easy to identify and work with. Just having a diagnosis of something doesn't necessarily mean they have complex or difficult inclusion needs. And just because a child doesn't have a diagnosis doesn't mean their needs aren't complex and challenging for services as well. So we also want to think here about particular things like in children that are experiencing particular kinds of vulnerability or disadvantage or intergenerational disadvantage. What are there may not be a diagnosis there or a medical issue, but how can we ensure that those children are still getting the benefits of early education, particularly because those are the children who can benefit the most? We also know unfortunately for the statistics in Australia, that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children are likely to be needing particular support to access the service. What's important to note there is that it isn't the children that necessarily need the support, it's the service that needs to make sure they're approaching children and families in culturally safe ways. So the inclusion needs aren't just about children, they're about the service in particular as well. The second thing to think about here is a positive one, because these issues can be challenging and difficult, and there are children's learning is complex in the first 5 years, full stop, when we add particular other inclusion needs onto that as well. Services are often resource poor, time poor. Leaders have a range of different pressures on their day. But one of the things that's a positive for me here is that this element is kind of trying to get us to think about is that we're not on our own. So educators and services aren't on their own. there's an impetus here to have a focus on partnerships and working together with a range of community stakeholders. Obviously, the one we would most think about is the inclusion support program for particular things. It's important to remember this program doesn't have a huge amount of funding. It has quite a narrow focus, but it's definitely a starting point for particular things. But there are a range of other organizations out there as well. And one of the great things about the modern world is a lot of them are easily searchable and findable online. But, you know, reaching out to local medical and health providers, local GPs, those kind of things, there are a lot of organizations that can provide some support. It might be financial support, it might just be visiting, it might be services we have to pay for. But what the NQS is kind of asking us to consider here is that we don't just want to be overwhelmed by particular issues. We want to reach out and find those people and organizations who can help us. And a great starting point, as I sort of said, might be those local community organizations, but also local MPs getting involved in whoever is representing you in government. You can actually go to them and raise specific issues you're facing and get them to identify support for you as well. So there's a political aspect to that as well. That's part of an MP's job. But also looking at networks of local other early childhood centres, reaching out and saying, you know, are there organisations and community groups you engage with that might be helpful as well. The third thing for me to kind of think about here is this is kind of a big picture one, probably the one I'm going to spend the most time on. I was fortunate in my previous career, I managed the Inclusion Support Agency in the ACT quite a while ago now, probably too long ago, but you know, probably 8 or 9 years ago. And one of the big issues that I would find as I went out to services and to speak with educators and leaders and organisations is this kind of this difference between access and participation. So sometimes we can, that's what this element is called, access and participation. So we want to kind of identify what those two terms mean. It's important to remember that access to an early education service is for a purpose, which is supporting children's learning and well-being, that they're benefiting from their time there. So a child just being able to walk through the door and enter a classroom doesn't necessarily ensure that they're participating and that they're getting those benefits. Because of the pressures and the difficulties we experience as a sector in terms of funding and wages for educators and all those kind of things, often just access is a win, and we shouldn't discount that sometimes services and educators have to fight really hard to make sure the children can just access. Once they're in there, though, there is a risk that sometimes that because the child is there, they're not given additional support beyond that time to make sure they're actually moving towards the learning outcomes, they're actually engaging in those learning and well-being experiences that will help them grow and develop. Sometimes we can fall victim to the assumption that, well, they're here, they're in the classroom, they're getting those benefits. So we really want to think about what that participation means for particular children. And this is where we want to think of inclusion as an ongoing thing. It's not something we do that once the child is in, we say, you know, we've sort of got inclusion, we've done that. Inclusion is an ongoing thing. It's also really important to remember, and the fundamental thing about inclusion, at least for me, is that inclusion isn't just about the child. Inclusion is about us, is about the service. One of the fundamental tenets of inclusive practice is that we're not asking the child to change themselves. The child comes to us as the child is, based on their previous experiences, based on the different things they're facing. What we can change is ourselves. We're professionals, we're adults. We have the ability to change our behaviours, change our settings, change our learning environments, change our enrolment processes, change a whole range of things that, as long as they fit within the Education and Care Services national law and regulations, we have a large control over how we do things. And because we can control those, that's what we have to focus on. So inclusion isn't about saying, you know, inverted commas, fixing the child. It's about fixing ourselves. What do we need to change and do to make sure that a wide range of children can access our services? And if we have particular children who are struggling, our first step has to be not, gee, I wish this child was different. It's what can we do to make sure this child is getting that learning and well-being they need here? And that can be challenging. It's very easy for me to say this on the other end of a microphone. It can often be quite challenging for services. But that's what that inclusive practice is about. And for me, it's probably one of those things that we never get 100% right. Children are so complex, and their needs and different requirements will always be unique. And there's only so much I think a service can do. But the striving to move towards that goal, I think, is what makes teams and educators great, when they acknowledge that, you know, we want to continue to get better. This is why the self-assessment and continuous improvement process, for me, is embedded in the National Quality Standard. The idea that It's not about beating ourselves up and saying, it's not about saying we're never good enough. It's about saying we always want to be better. We always want to, you know, push the learning and well-being outcomes a little bit more. We want to include more children. We want to make sure they're participating. That's actually a really good goal. And if we can shift our sort of mindsets to celebrating that and acknowledging that and saying we'll always try and get better, that's when you can have some really fantastic inclusion outcomes. And that's when that engagement with the community can be really, really strong and powerful. All right, so let's have a think about some suggestions for nominated supervisors. Again, inclusion can be a difficult challenge for centre directors when they have educators working in classrooms who may be struggling with particular behaviours, or when for yourselves as centre directors, you're working with families that you know will require additional support or additional focuses. So the first perspective as a leader is really role modelling and leading those practices that I was talking about before, which is the what can we change perspective. And that has to be role modelled. So that has to come from the person who's in charge of the service, where we demonstrate that we're willing to work in different ways, we're willing to work alongside educators. And that to me is the most important part, being really working directly with the educators in your team in classrooms with children, demonstrating those inclusive practices. From my personal experience, you know, there's no workshop, there's no article, there's no potentially no even podcast that, you know, someone can listen to and suddenly become great at inclusive practices, because educators are facing real complex, difficult issues on a day-to-day basis in classrooms. So what does work is role modeling and demonstration of inclusive practices. And I've seen this happen time and time again, where someone who is credible, someone who is trusted, someone who is part of the profession goes in and does that work. It can make a huge, huge difference. And then the next thing is really about building those connections and partnerships. Every community is different. Every area that services work in will be unique and different. So it's really about reaching out and finding those connections and partnerships. Definitely start with inclusion support. They're a funded program. They're designed to be in the sector. That's absolutely a fantastic place to start. But then thinking about, you know, what else is available in the community? Where else could I look? You can actually ask inclusion support for help around that as well. What's online that we can access? How can we find different ways of engaging different support? That really is an important part of the nominated supervisor's role, knowing your community really well. We're going to talk a lot about that next week in Element 6.2.3 as well. But that's a big part of the leadership role, knowing who your service is and where you sit in that context, and what's available for support is really, really important. And then a couple of ideas for the quality improvement plan. The first goal I would have would be the service has connected with local individuals and organisations to support our inclusive practices. So this is a nice sort of not too broad and relatively specific, but that will work for your specific community. Where are you going to find those organisations, those individuals that can support you? And then educators are provided with regular training on inclusive practices. And that's to go alongside that role modelling, that alongside development with educators in classrooms. But the best thing you can do in these examples is find, you know, high quality professional development from people who have worked in the sector. I would really recommend that you can find those people who know what it's like to be in a classroom with children who require additional and ongoing support. But always remembering that all children have inclusion needs, and it may be that there's specific issues you're facing in your community you want to get specific training on, or you might want to focus on inclusion and social justice issues as an overall concept. All right, that's it for another episode. We are barreling through Quality Area 6. In fact, we're wrapping up Quality Area 6 next week. I guess it's time to start thinking about what we'll do after exploring the NQS. I have a couple of ideas. So this is a brief keep me posted sort of teaser statement for after Quality Area 6 has wrapped up. I'm going to put out a bit of a poll on some suggestions for a couple of other series I'd quite like to do following exploring the NQS. I'll be interested to hear what you think. But thanks for listening to this episode. And if you are back with me next week, I look forward to talking to you then. So until then, it's goodbye from me.